morning, everybody, and welcome here to the enlightenradio.org as we tune up the little electrons here to their proper pitch. And welcome on to our radio station, the legendary organizer and raconteur poet. A man about town, a man on town, a man in a little town, a man in a big town, and my good friend and a compadre from the labor movement. You know, it's interesting, you know, when you're just hanging out in a little community like Shepherdstown, it's not like you see union people walking up and down the street all the time. And it's a loss to our country that there's less of us than there used to be. It's a culture that can accomplish things or could accomplish things that need to be done, but we have to learn how to do it again, apparently. Anyway, I'll stop there and welcome Stuart Acuff to Resistance News.
Good morning, Brother John. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, sisters and brothers, friends and neighbors. Welcome to Resistance Radio on enlightenradio.org. Got a great show for you today. Brother Jamal Craig is calling in from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, taking a little break over the morning of the loss of Pittsburgh's NAACP leader, taking a little break to call in with us and talk about the unfolding of this national drama. John, you got some music to kick us off with today?
How about Knock on Wood?
Yes, Eddie Floyd, Stax Records.
Okay, here we go.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors. Welcome to Resistance Radio. our national drama, and our national nightmare right here on www.enlightenradio.org. Do me a favor. Take a break from this show for 30 seconds and call a couple of friends and neighbors and tell them to tune in on their computer or their phone to www.enlightenradio.org.
And there's a player at the top of the page. Just click play.
Click play. Yes, sir. There you go. And listen to the Wild Man Stuart Acuff on with you this morning, 10 o'clock every Wednesday, to talk about our resistance to rump. Our resistance to 45, our resistance to the Russian asset sitting in our White House, the People's House, that he calls a dump, John.
Well, if Alec owns West Virginia, why can't Putin own the United States Capitol?
Well, that's a good question. Two wrongs don't make a right, though.
No, they don't.
Now, you, being now, look, a failed now, Boy Scout that now, you are, you should know two wrongs don't make a right.
Now, yeah, well, but then there's three. So Vladimir, though, by all appearances, has fallen out of love with the Donald. And why you ever put a dime's worth of investment in that guy in the beginning is beyond me. But it looks like your investment has gone south, at least.
I believe it has.
And now you're going to have to resort to
blackmail.
You know, trying him.
Blackmail,
try
maybe.
Trying on him what you tried on Hillary, maybe, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things that's really funny today, John, and we got a lot to talk about. John Case, my good friend and leader, founder, CEO, president, and chairman of the board of Enlighten Radio. I'm the chief cook and bottle washer.
You were the host of Resistance News.
And the aide-de-camp.
And the aide-de-camp. Well, you're many things, you know, Stuart. I mean, an organizer. I mean, one of the things I noticed about
I was
Stuart,
a hell of an organizer, brother, back
still,
in the
you
day.
You still are. I mean, I noticed how, you know, those folks in, around the Resistance and thing all of a sudden, you know, started to figure out how they, we know how to talk to the Congress people and all that. Well, they know that because, you know, Stuart explained a few things to them.
Well,
That's probably elementary for, you know, labor organizing.
Thank you for saying that, but I love my sister.
I know they're coming out, but I mean that's a great organizer lets them speak for themselves and explains how to do it. That's the whole thing, right?
Right. That's it. Thank you very much, my brother. I appreciate that. We're going to talk about Rump's racism this morning. You know, you can take a day. Well, you know, we could take every Wednesday for a month and talk about his racism, and then another month and talk about his misogyny, and then another month and talk about his xenophobia, but we don't have time to do all that. So this morning we're going to put his speech to the police in on Long Island, and put it in the context of Black Lives Matter and the struggle for racial justice and against police brutality by African-American people, particularly young African-American people, and why their struggle is critical to our resistance, the resistance of everybody. And John, you had, as we, while we have a couple of minutes before Jamal calls, you had an interesting question this morning that we might want to pose to our listeners now and come back to towards the end of the show, something about General Kelly.
Well, yes, I was imagining a narrative, okay? This is just a coming motion picture, perhaps, about, you know, who is John P. Kelly, just appointed as chief of staff, and whose first act was to fire the highly celebrated Mooch.
Anthony Scaramucci.
And
what?
Told,
forget about it. I'm Scaramucci. I'm from New York.
Right. But anyway, it looks like John P. Kelly, general, formerly head of the Southern Command, appointed there
four-star Marine general.
Appointed there by Leon Panetta, actually.
A genius.
Interesting guy. And now he's come in to take control.
Right.
Now the number of military people,
right,
taking control of the most important positions, And basically coming in behind all of Trump's gaslighting and day-to-day, you know, let me just say shit the bed politics, okay?
Right. And his fascination with fascists.
So my wondering is now, is the military coming in behind and taking control? And if they are doing so, as John P. Kelly is taking control of Trump, on whose behalf is he doing so? And so my big question is, who is John P. Kelly?
General John P. Kelly. United States Marine Corps.
And who's he been talking to?
Yes. That's a great question. And of course, nothing is out of question. There's nothing out of bounds with this Trump administration and the Trump presidency. Nothing is out of bounds. I mean, we have now exceeded my worst fears for what Trump would be. And we have now exceeded my most hopeful dreams of what the resistance could do. Because the resistance so far has all but completely stymied Donald Trump.
Well, if we define the resistance broadly to be not only the grassroots activity, but also the institutional players that have resisted this rape of our institutions, you know, and constitutions. So,
the press.
And the judges. Some of the judges.
Press,
and
the judiciary. You're right. You know. I mean, there are three distinct institutions that are holding up democracy right now, supporting democracy. The free press has been wonderful. The Washington Post and New York Times have been wonderful.
L.A. Times, even the Chicago Sun-Times. You know?
Mean the Chicago Tribune?
Tribune,
they had a great piece yesterday, the Tribune did. So the free press is holding at CNN. CNN has done a great job. The judiciary has done an amazing job at stopping the Muslim ban and putting the brakes on some of his worst ideas, and an engaged citizenry, as Thomas Jefferson once imagined.
And clearly parts of the military also not happy with Trump.
But
that begs my little narrative question of, when they're unhappy with the stability of their government...
We'll get back to this at
towards the end of the show.
What happens
next? About
half an hour.
Good morning. This is Enlightened Radio. You are on the air. Who's calling, please?
This is Jamal Craig.
Oh, brother Jamal Craig. Welcome to Enlightened Radio in West Virginia, Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Brother, how are you this morning?
I'm doing wonderful, brother. Doing wonderful.
Give a shout out, if you will. I mentioned him without having his name. Give a shout out and a message of gratitude for the life of the NAACP leader and brother who just passed in Pittsburgh.
That would be sister.
Oh, sister.
Constance Parker, better known affectionately as Connie Parker. In these parts up here in Pittsburgh, a fearless and tireless leader and advocate for the cause of civil rights.
Great. Well, thank you, Jamal, for remembering her publicly. And I'm really grateful that you could be with us today. Jamal Craig, brothers and sisters, once was in the Civil Rights Department, a leader in the Civil Rights Department of the United Steelworkers. He's now a candidate for a PhD, back at school, looking to better himself and increase his footprint in our world for justice. How you been, Jamal?
Doing well. As I share with you frequently, undertaking a lot of reading and a lot of writing.
What are you getting the PhD in? What's the PhD in?
Oh, what we so need in this day and time, public policy.
Oh, okay.
And you're looking at A. Philip Randolph specifically, right, Jamal?
I am looking at A. Philip Randolph and the impact that he had on this country as a whole, but more narrowly, what he was able to do in the era of civil rights, in the arena of civil rights and justice, by building broad coalitions, white, black, Jew, Catholic, Christian, whatever the case was, to get us to a point to where we were focused on equality, racial equality,
Amen.
Social
Amen.
Equality,
Amen.
Economic equality, whatever it was, that we had those forms of justice at the forefront of this great country. And that's where my focus is.
Yeah, it's a wonderful focus. There are two things I remember A. Philip Randolph for that really stick out for me. One, he was a great organizer. He founded an all-black union in 21 or 22, during the height of the Woodrow Wilson attack on organized labor, the deportation of so many of the Wobblies to the Soviet Union in those days, including, I think, Big Bill Haywood, the leader of the Wobblies. And in a time when unions were not recognized and you couldn't necessarily, there was no freedom for workers to organize, he grew that union of black workers and sustained that union for 40 years against all odds. And in 1945, A. Philip Randolph went to Harry Truman and said, Mr. President, you have to desegregate the military. And Truman said, Mr. Randolph, I can't do that. And A. Philip Randolph said, Mr. President, you have to do that. If you don't, black people, I think he used the term Negroes, from across America are going to march on Washington, D.C. And that threat was enough to move a decent man, Harry Truman was, to desegregate the United States military. Am I right about that, Jamal?
You are on point with that, brother. He certainly did that.
And that threat,
and when you look at one of the institutions today, the United States military, while it's not without racism and not without its issues, but it is a system that's in place that has a level of fairness in it.
That's right.
Like none other.
That's right. That's exactly right. Showing us that diversity is our strength. And while we mention that, we should also mention the horrible tweet that Trump sent out last week, saying unilaterally, without consulting with the Pentagon, without consulting with the military and the generals and the admirals and the leaders, with one tweet, said that all transgender people are going to be kicked out of the U.S. military. And, John, that's another case of the military pushing back against Trump. They pushed back immediately on that, and good for the military for doing that. Jamal.
Right on.
Jamal, I know you've read about it. Did you by chance hear Trump's rumps speech to the police on Long Island last Friday?
I watched it live, unfortunately.
Well, tell us what you thought. Tell us about your and take your time. You're in no hurry. We're in no hurry. That's one of the great things about this show. We have our guests on. They can actually think and speak freely. But tell us your observations and what you thought, and after we go there, I want you and I to have a conversation about that speech in the context of the struggle for racial justice and Black Lives Matter. But let's start by talking about the speech itself. Okay, Jamal?
As I watched, him utter these words, my mouth hit the floor.
Yep.
I was at a loss for words at a time in this era, in this country, where police violence and the killing of innocent people is on a rise. I can't say that it's on the rise. It's just that we have different ways of communicating and different technology that puts it out there a little faster.
Yep.
And connects us a whole lot better.
Yep.
But at this time where that is the norm, where we have access to information and we have an issue, a great issue with innocent people being killed at the hands of police, under shady circumstances, unarmed people being killed, that this president would make those types of comments. There are two things that struck me, brother. Two things. Number one, the comments themselves. Just totally over the top, if you will.
Unconscionable.
And the thing that struck me also was the fact that the police officers standing in the backdrop behind him stood there and literally clapped. When they have an obligation and their duty to protect and serve. Right. So how do you even get your mouth to utter these words, don't be so nice?
Right.
We have a justice system. And if we have this justice system that says you are innocent until you are proven guilty,
right,
then how can a president stand at a podium and make such horrid remarks? We have a justice system, a country that's founded on a document called the Constitution.
Right.
And when the founders wrote this document, they saw fit to go in and amend it. And several amendments out of the first 10 deal with what? Crime and the treatment of people, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The First Amendment.
Right, right.
And then you have a president who literally goes on a stage in front of police officers and tells the nation that it is okay and acceptable to mistreat, abuse prisoners who are in custody. Do not be nice.
Right.
Don't worry about being nice. When you put your hand over your head, over their head, take the hand off. What does that mean? What signal does that send to people?
It sends a Freddie Gray signal.
It means kill them. That's what it means. Yeah. At will.
That's, I immediately watching that, and I was out of town, so I had access to a television, and I was watching it, and I immediately thought of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, because nobody hit him, right? They just threw him in the back of a police van and bounced him all around the roughest streets in Baltimore until he died.
But, exactly.
Nobody assertively beat him. Now, John and I were talking about a little while ago, and I know you know this, Jamal. All of us who've been around nonviolent civil disobedience for a long time have had street-side justice administered to us. In other words, the police have been angry, so they took their anger out on us while we were in handcuffs or in the street. And we've seen during big demonstrations that at some point they stop arresting people and just start administering corporal justice on the street. In fact, I just received a small settlement from a lawsuit going back to 2003, Jamal, and the demonstrations against the FTAA in Miami. Those demonstrations that the steelworkers led, and I know you were there in 2003 in Miami, and I received that settlement for being having street-side justice administered on us and being pepper-sprayed and tear-gassed. And that's what the president was saying. Go ahead and do that. That's okay. That even it's though okay. they are presumed innocent until adjudicated in a court of law, punish them. Punish them. Don't be so nice. tragic.
Maybe when we remove Trump from office, we should not be so nice.
Yes.
Exactly.
You're right, John. You're right.
My grandmother always had a saying, be careful what you ask for.
Ain't grandma's always right, Jamal. I had this mental picture yesterday of Trump going to jail. And, of course, we know he'll go to a country club jail if he goes.
Not in my administration. When I'm attorney general, that's not going to happen. I got
You got three years of law school first. then I'll campaign for you to be attorney general.
You know, I don't have to go to law school any more than Che Guevara had to become a real economist to take over the Cuban economy. Maybe he should have been an economist.
You mean even more than Stuart Acuff has to become a real economist?
After the revolution, I believe Fidel was running around asking if anybody knew anything about economics, since they were going to have to run the government. And you know, they had some leadership meeting, and Che raises his hand. and Fidel says, I knew you were a doctor and you're a great revolutionary, but I didn't know you knew anything about economics. He says, I thought you said communist, but I can do economics too.
We skipped from...
Sorry about that.
This revolution to that revolution. But now, here's the real message I want to get out today, Jamal, and I want you to help me get that out. That the struggle for racial justice and the struggle to protect African-American people and the black community from bad cops must be part of the resistance. Those of us in the resistance must open our arms to include the Black Lives Matter movement and the struggle for racial justice. That every time the wrong guys, the radical right, the reactionaries, the fascists, every time the Southern bosses, every time they win, one reason they won is because we were divided over bullshit. We were divided over things that in the big scope of life don't matter. And
exactly.
So talk about that, if you would. I'm sorry for maybe heading you off, but if you would comment on that.
Well, this interesting concept, Black Lives Matter. I like to think of it as, I often say that Black Lives Matter movement has been around for a long, long time. We've seen it evolve and manifest itself in different ways over the course of history, but it's always been here.
Right.
You take the black soldiers who fought in the Revolutionary War. What were they fighting for? Take the establishment of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in Philadelphia. What was it established for?
Amen.
You take the great abolitionist Frederick Douglass and all of the work that he did. What was he fighting for?
Freedom.
Dr. King, 60s.
Freedom.
And to say that the Black Lives Matter movement group, young black people, don't deserve a seat at the table. It's an irrelevant movement. It's an irrelevant group of people. And to hear the absurd comments about Black Lives Matter is racist, All Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, it's just totally nonsense.
It is.
What we're saying in the Black Lives Matter movement is simply we have a voice and we are going to invoke our voice at the table so that we can put our issues there. And the one issue that has come to the forefront is that we want to be treated as human beings and not die as savages or treated like dogs and killed openly in the streets.
Yes.
You know, go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
Well, we had a lengthy discussion of this in a local Quaker meeting, which is predominantly white, and it's very interesting. Of course, when sponsorship or endorsement of the Black Lives Matter protest that was connected to the killing of a guy named Wayne Jones in Martinsburg almost over 4 years ago now.
Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Five
in the
cops,
Eastern Panhandle.
27 bullets in the back, an unarmed guy. Okay. And, there's been all kinds of illegal obfuscation and attempts to smother this thing. And we've had a demonstration up there going on for, a vigil, right?
Right.
Monthly on the day of the month that Wayne Jones was killed.
Right. 13th of every month.
But in the local meeting, that's what the point I was trying to make is the discussion, don't all lives matter? right? And then, of course, my good friend, Saki, you know, he says, well, that's the problem, isn't it? Is that all lives don't matter.
Right.
You know? And what do you mean? Well, in fact, black lives don't matter.
Right.
Okay? And that's why young folks are saying they do.
Right.
I mean, you know, but that sort of colorblind attitude that it's a colorblindness that's all in your head, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
You're living out in a nice rural community, and you got a bunch of customers, and they're all white, and you know, and all this, and you, even if you have personal relationships and all that, it seems like, oh well, gee. You know, and in my little world, it's like that old Robert Browning poem, you know, everything's right in the world as she goes from charnel house to charnel house to charnel house. Right now. well, I mean, I feel that there's that, you know, part of that is just a reality check. And, you know, the fact that there was a reality check there in that meeting, and look, that no, they don't matter.
Right, exactly.
And we woke up. It's weird. I mean, not completely, of course. Nobody ever completely wakes up.
We woke up because of technology and because of a movement that started with a brother in Ferguson who was unarmed and killed by two police officers and left in the street for, 4 hours? His body was left in the street 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, there grew up behind that and behind video cams. And behind
the murder of the young guy by that guy Zimmerman in Florida, that was a biggie. That you know, and yep. He goes out
Trayvon Martin,
and he goes out and buys a new gun and beats his girlfriend up. You know.
Yep.
The list goes on and on.
Yeah, the list does go on, and more we find out that people are shot, brutalized when unarmed. And in too many cases. Now, we're not saying that all police are like this, you know, at all. But there is an institutional problem. This is the very definition of institutional racism. It's the fight of all of us. We cannot leave this struggle to African American people.
Going back to Randolph, brother, I mean, we got to have the coalitions in place to do the work that needs to be done.
Right.
Whether you're black, whether you're brown, whether you're white, whether you're a woman, whether you're gay, straight, transgender, whatever the case may be, all of us have to be at this table fighting this struggle, because once we're done with this issue, we have to be prepared to move on to the next issue, because there's an attack on every single group that I just named.
Absolutely. Every ism, there's an attack on us. You know, this reminds me of when I was convicted, as we used to say in the Southern Baptist and the Southern Baptist, the denomination and the generalization in the Southern Baptist Church, when I was convicted of my sin of homophobia a couple of decades ago. And it occurred to me, when is there too much justice? And if I stand up for justice for African American people, and I stand up for justice for workers and Latino people, and for women, who am I to not stand up for justice for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people? And so if you're willing to fight the forces of reaction and fascism in our resistance to Donald Trump, then why not fight for racial reconciliation and racial justice, and to eliminate this horrible horrible example of institutional racism? Yes,
we've got to.
Yeah.
There's no other way.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Yesterday, Trump tweeted that he is going to start suing universities for not admitting too many, you know, non-white people. I mean, I don't know whether this is another gaslighting episode while the military seizes power behind him. I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but this is going to be another all around assault.
Well, you know, Jeff Sessions loves this, Brother John.
Well, I guess,
and it's what he would focus on. He you know, he's going to focus the whole Department of Justice on punishing affirmative action, and I mean, Sessions loves that, right?
Well, he's going to have to redirect all the college loans, you know, at some point, you know, to, well, we'll just cancel them, I guess, because if you can't afford to go to college, why is that my problem?
Right. You know, exactly. Kind of, yeah. I mean, if you can't afford to go to college, it's you and your parents.
Right. I mean, we get to go to college as a result of merit, you know, and right. The measure of merit is how much money you have.
That's
right. And Donald Trump's general. I mean, you pivot from this devastating blow, which should be a wake-up call for us all with this health care vote we had last week. And, yes. Stuart, I've seen you out there time and time again.
Thank you, brother.
To stand up to this administration and demand that health care be available to all.
We beat this crap back. Yes, we
and
did.
And the next week. Look at what they come up with.
Right.
Okay, we're going to go after affirmative action.
Yep.
Police officers, go out and beat the hell out of anybody you see. Don't protect them.
Right.
And as you say, I want to make it clear, I am not anti-police. I mean, some of my good friends are police officers, and they deserve to be treated with the respect and dignity that goes along with doing their job, because it is a job that can be very abusive and very frustrating. But at the same time, if you don't have the level of maturity and composure to have the same level of respect for people that you protect and serve, then you probably shouldn't be in that job.
And training and accountability. I mean, there's got to be accountability. I mean, every time a police officer abuses unnecessarily, when he is not or she is not in danger, abuses an arrestee or a suspect, he is violating democratic values. Or she
exactly.
is violating democratic values.
Maybe so, some part of the problem is also how police departments are funded.
Yes.
I mean, if you're... We had a fellow that was calling in from this outfit called Law Enforcement Against... It used to be called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, but now I think they're called Law Enforcement Action Partnership.
Leap.
And they favor decriminalizing all drugs, basically, and mm-hmm. ending the war on drugs completely. Mm-hmm. All right. But this guy who called in, he was a former Texas... What do they call them? Texas Rangers down
yeah.
there? State
police? Uh-huh.
Anyway, and he was involved and directly in busting people for drugs and, as he says, ruining their lives to no purpose whatsoever, okay?
Right.
Then, you know, he came around and he became, you know, he's now a lobbyist in Washington for, you know, decriminalizing, get rid of it. You know, it's
right.
a medical problem and it's led to this unbelievable corruption. But he goes to the FOP president.
Fraternal Order of Police.
Fraternal Order of Police.
One of the police unions.
And talks to him about all this, and the guy says, yes, I, you know, morally, I agree with you, okay? He says, but the DEA and other drug-related agencies are funding, you know, it was over a couple of hundred thousand police officers.
Right.
So it was a huge number.
Right.
And, you know, if the drug funding goes out and, you know, these practices start to change, I mean, these guys are going to be out of a job and I'm running a union about, you know, the usual, you know,
right.
kind of thing. And so it made me wonder, I mean, there is a big institutional, the way police departments are funded, you know,
mm-hmm.
like maybe if you're getting your money from the DEA, maybe you don't have any choice about whether you buy the Humvee that runs through people's entire apartment building, right? Rather than community policing or something.
Go ahead, Jamal.
You think to what the police chief of Chicago said, and let's talk about Chicago for just a second, because this president has repeatedly talked about what he's going to do with Chicago. Well,
right.
the police chief there said, we have to change the underlying culture.
Yep.
to what you were just speaking of, the funding, we've got to change the entire culture.
Yep.
Because you think about this president, as I said, has talked repeatedly about Chicago, Chicago. What has he done? Send 40 more ATF agents to Chicago. 40 more ATF agents.
Oh, God.
That's what he's doing. And we have to ask ourselves, is this really the solution to this particular problem? On the heels of this monumental vote to take away health care from people, perhaps the solution should be in investing in jobs, job training, counseling, education, health care, things that people need.
Right.
Because this is why there's so much violence in the streets, because they don't have access to health care, mental health care,
jobs, education, job training,
whatever the case may be. But we know we're steadily trying to tell. I mean, like you just brought up the point, the Attorney General's agenda has shifted to going after universities to sue them and take away their right to create solutions to bring about diversity and get those who have been underserved, college degrees, job training, education. We're going after that, but we're sending 40 more agents to deal with this onslaught of violence that we have in Chicago.
It's all smoke.
What kind of agenda is that?
It's just fake. It's a fake. It's just fake from beginning to end, and it's a cover for, you know, the most just I'm afraid to get to name what it is, because I'm not sure we've ever seen what is really coming down the road at us before. I mean, you know, you look back at the last century and you see all kinds of horrible possibilities. Okay, but I mean, this thing that's happening, and it's happening in a different global context in which there's many challenges, okay, that require a more level-headed and more scientific approach to things. But we're getting
less.
We're getting less, and we're heading towards what looks like 1914.
Right.
I mean, as that looks like that. You know.
Right.
You're right. Yeah, you're exactly right.
It's terrible. And let me hasten to say, Brother Jamal, that indeed poverty and the lack of the flame of hope. I live in a little town in West Virginia, the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, called Martinsburg, the opioid capital of America. And John, if you and Brother Jamal will allow me, I'm going to read a poem I wrote.
He's been writing. You wouldn't believe how many poems this guy's been writing, Jamal. It's just like his past has left him, and the muse has landed on the top of his head. It's unbelievable. Here he goes.
Okay. Go right ahead, brother. Go right ahead.
Let me see if I can find it first. I had this problem last week, John. I couldn't get a signal in here.
Without signal.
Yeah, yeah.
You may just have to rhyme every third word, you know, and we'll be good.
The poem was rhyming every third word. It's a terrible thing that 40 years of flat wages, globalization, capitalism run amok, without unfettered capitalism, and the disease of despair, the diseases of despair, what it has wrought in our cities and in our country. I was talking to the guy who wrote The Wire for HBO, and he said when we started doing research for The Wire, we found out one thing. The rise of drug dealing and drug use in Baltimore coincided with the decline of jobs on the dock.
Just on the dock?
On the docks.
Primarily?
On the docks.
Not Sparrow's Point?
He didn't bring up Sparrow's Point, but you could...
certainly
put that in there. But, you know, the one place that you could go as a young African-American man, because women were closed out at that time, where you could go with less than a high school degree and get a job, was on the docks as a longshoreman. But as technology and innovation took over those jobs and cranes replaced men at unloading the ships, the rise of drug use and drug dealing went sky high in Baltimore.
Right.
And now, in Detroit, they talk about Baltimore, bad Baltimore. You know,
in
New York City, they talk about bad Baltimore, right?
Right, bad Baltimore.
And all of these things work together. When you have a government and a supposed leader who dismisses democracy and disavows human rights and runs rampant on the people, all of that is exacerbated as we're watching with Trump and
right.
the assault in our communities.
Exactly.
We're going to cut you loose in a little bit, Jamal, and because I know you're busy today and you're running, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate you taking time out to come be with us. I know I put you in a little bit of a personal bind, and I'm sorry for that. You said today wouldn't work, but you made time for us, and I'm so grateful for it. We're going to have a podcast of this interview with you, and I hope you'll share it with your friends and family.
You have Jamal's email address?
I don't have Jamal's email address.
Okay.
I generally communicate with Jamal through personal messenger on
Facebook?
On Facebook.
Well, I'll post it on Facebook.
Okay.
The link, okay.
And maybe, Jamal, you can send me your email address on PM, and I'll send it to John. I need to have your
email
address
anyway. You can send an email to me. Just host at enlightenedradio.org.
I need to have
your
email anyway, Jamal. Listen, brother, we are so grateful to you for showing up with us on short notice, being here when it wasn't convenient, stepping out of his comfort zone. As always, for justice, brother, soon to be the Reverend Dr. Jamal Craig. We appreciate you very much.
Is this a
brother.
Reverend doctor?
Thank you, brother.
Be.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, buddy. Thanks so much.
See ya.
I appreciate you guys. Take
appreciate
care.
Appreciate you.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Jamal.
Bye.
You know, John, as I think about Trump's words in the context of Black Lives Matters, and we were talking earlier about today is the birthday of Robin Williams, and I think about Reverend James Orange, who was one of Dr. King's closest advisors, bodyguard, aide-de-camp.
Friend.
Friend, brother.
Comrade.
The organizer of the children's strike in Birmingham.
Or as some of my old Bolshevik friends say, comrade.
Right, right. And I remember how often Reverend Orange talked about Jimmie Lee Jackson, who was killed by the Klan, and some people think it was with police cooperation. Jimmie Lee Jackson was killed, I believe, the night before the march on the Selma Bridge, and as a way to try to intimidate the marchers, and killed in the streets of Selma. The night before the march. Of course, it didn't stop anything. Because when the people get a thirst for justice, when the people get a taste of power, the people will not be defeated by oppression. And that's where we're at now. That's why we salute brothers like Reverend Dr. Jamal Craig. That's why we salute giants like Reverend James Orange. That's why we salute the women of the resistance in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, who've been on this show so many times before and who fought so hard to get Shelley Moore Capito to do the right thing vis-a-vis West Virginians.
And they got her to promise, but she got herself to lie.
Yes, that's exactly right. We had a promise from her on Thursday before the vote, and she broke that promise on the vote.
She did.
And she broke that promise on the vote on the motion to proceed.
Yeah.
See, Senator Capito, we were watching. I can tell you how you voted every time vote came up. And
right.
Except for one time, it was always wrong. And we're going to remember that. We're not going to turn loose.
It was essentially wrong.
It was, yes.
You know, yeah, I think to violate directly a public promise like that is, that's a bigger betrayal than Bill Clinton getting the blowjob.
Yes, I think that is.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I got it. Shut up, John.
John's trying to end the show too soon. That's all right. I just want to remind everybody, please be with us next Wednesday on Resistance Radio. Be with us every Wednesday on Resistance Radio, where you're going to hear the latest and the greatest in the resistance, both here locally in West Virginia, where resistance activity is so strong. Tomorrow night, I'm going to a canvassing workshop held by the women of resistance, particularly those in Vigilance and Indivisible, here in Shepherdstown. I'm going to a canvassing workshop. I think I know a little bit about canvassing. I've knocked on a lot of doors in my days. A lot of doors in my days. Little alliteration there, John.
I told you were going to get to rhyming there.
But this resistance marches on. I'm so proud to be a part of it and so proud to support these women and these women leaders who are doing so much for all the rest of us.
I got to help you out here.
All right, John.
We not only support resistance.
Right.
We support persistence.
Persistence! And we are still, and she persisted.
And we are going to keep insisting. And we're going to ask you to enlist.
And we are going to be persistent in our insistence.
And if you formally enlisted and then, you know, delisted, we're going to ask you to re-enlist.
Re-enlist.
You know?
Step back up.
And then we're going to ask you, are you actually pissed?
Right.
Off.
And how pissed are you?
And if you are, don't miss the next episode of Resistance News.
Radio. Right here.
Radio.
On www.enlightenradio.org. We're going to go out with some music here in a little bit. Not quite ready for that yet. In just a little bit, let's go out with something else from Stax. That song we started with, Thunder and Lightning, Knock on Wood, was by Eddie Floyd. It was written by Eddie and Steve Cropper, who was the great guitarist in the Stax studio band.
But what did you want to hear? You want to hear something else from?
Let's hear something from Otis Redding going out from Macon, Georgia. But anyway, Steve Cropper and Eddie Floyd wrote Knock on Wood at the Lorraine Motel, the same motel where Dr. King was assassinated. They wrote that in 1966, just about 2 years before the sanitation strike in Memphis and the assassination of Dr. King. I love Stax because I'm from West Tennessee, but also because Stax took the soft, sweet soul of Detroit, Motown, and Philadelphia, and they added the funk of the South at Stax. They added the blues of the Mississippi River Delta to the sweet soul of the North and came up with the Memphis sound.
Wow.
Stax sold the sound of freedom across the South with great artists like Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, Eddie Floyd, the Staples, Mavis Staples, Pops Staples, Wilson Pickett recorded at Stax. Aretha Franklin did an album at Stax. Of course, the Blues Brothers movie included a lot of songs from Stax. And you can hear John Belushi in the movie speaking to Steve Cropper while they were singing, "Hold On, I'm Coming." Play it, Steve! Okay. Play it, Steve! So take us out of here, John,
okay,
with either some Sam and Dave, "Hold On, I'm Coming," or some Otis Redding.
I got Otis Redding.
You got Otis? Oh, play it, John. Okay. Play it.
This is Lucille.
Lucille, you won't do your sister's will.
All right, Mr.
Memphis to Macon, Georgia. Otis Redding. Memphis, Tennessee. That soul. See you next week, brothers and sisters. Resistance Radio, 10 o'clock a.m. next Wednesday. Otis Redding.